Sinistra. Terra.
Today's episode is brought to you by Balulu Studios. Balulu Studios is a small event space located in Savannah, Georgia. For more information, visit BalluluStudios.com. That's B-U-L-U-L-U Studios.com.
Hello, this is Kevin. Thank you for listening to The 10 Frame. Kelly and I recently had the opportunity to speak with Samantha Melvin, a painter and a printmaker who lives and works just outside of Austin, Texas. Learn more about her work at SamanthaMelvin.com. You can follow the podcast, Kelly and myself, on Instagram at The 10 Frame, at Kelly K. Thompson Art, and at Kevin Will Paint. And one last thing, if you're going to the Art Fields 2024 event that's held in Lake City, South Carolina, please stop by the Continuum and check out my work. P.S. Don't forget to breathe. Samantha, thank you very much for taking some time to speak with us. It's been a while since we've seen each other, so I'm happy to see you on Zoom, and it's great. Let's talk about your work.
Yeah, actually, let's go ahead and if you could let people know where they can find you.
Absolutely. Thank you both so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So my name's Samantha Melvin, and my website is actually www.samanthamelvin.com. And then I can be found on Instagram, and that's at Samantha Melvin Art. Just very simply, no dots or doodads.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
Can you just let us know and let the audience know about what type of work you make, what the medium is, and maybe some scale, materials, some of those items?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So I consider myself a painter. But actually, I'm really a painter and a printmaker. I've always painted, and the printmaking is fairly new, I would say, in the last 2 years predominantly, where that has just become such an important part of my practice. But I always think about printmaking as a painter would, because I work in monotype, where I'm not creating additions. I'm really thinking about the individual piece. And part of my practice is also thinking about patterns. I focus on the botanical and really about how humans and nature interact and how that relationship is actually a very strong one. And while we humans don't tend to do right necessarily by nature all of the time, we've made some dramatically bad decisions in the past. But I think one of the key aspects of my work is optimism. I see the beauty and I see what we can do in harmony and continue to do in that harmony. And so I'm really talking about harmony in my work. The paintings that I do are predominantly acrylic, but I also bring in other materials into that. So it's maybe more mixed media. I love collage. I love graphite and merging those in a composition with the acrylic, where you kind of, there's a push and pull with the materials, and some of the materials you can see and some of them become hidden over time, really working those layers. And I do that in my printmaking as well. The printmaking process that I utilize is a focus on stencils, where I draw those components, I cut them out, and then I apply the ink to the plate and create the kind of the color story as they go and build layers in that way, utilizing the stencils and moving them around. And I think part of that conversation is how we see so many different types of plants around us, so many different types of petals and leaves, and, you know, really looking at the fine details. And I really love observing nature and thinking about how all of this comes together. But the beauty of it all, I think, is that every time we look at a landscape, there's something different about it. The light is slightly different. The colors, the leaves might have changed a little bit. The flower, rather than it being just a new bloom, it has evolved into a more mature flower. And then it starts moving towards decay. And that's all part of that life cycle. I really just am passionate about that component of our environment and nature. And I really love that play that happens in compositions where we lay down that first mark and we are kind of figuring out where we're going to go in a piece. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a planner. No. Maybe that is understood by what I just said. I kind of have a vision for where I want it to go, but I don't have a list of things that I have to check off in each of my pieces. I really like the evolution that happens in the moment, kind of those serendipitous happenings of color and light and shape and how all of that comes together to create a composition. And sometimes you go too far and you can pull back a little bit. And as painters, you know, you just cover it up. And you start over, or you work another color in, and it kind of a more opaque color in it kind of creates a blank space. Right. And sometimes we need those spaces.
If I can jump in to expand upon a little bit on your choices, your color choices, you did touch on that in the decision making and not being a planner, but I'm looking at some of your pieces that you have, it almost looks like a fabric. It's kind of, I can't tell what the substrate is, but the colors are extremely vibrant, bright oranges and pale blues. And how do you go about selecting your color? And if you're not a planner, does that happen serendipitously also as you're in the studio? Do you plan at all when it comes to thinking about what your palette is going to be?
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a mixed bag, actually, because when we really understand color, and I have been fortunate to have really played with color, to really see how colors interact. And I think that's one of the things that as young artists are developing, or, you know, early emerging artists, as they're developing, I think that's something that has to be done as part of our fundamentals, is it really understanding color theory. And my background wasn't a traditional art school. So actually, my background is not in art or art education. I studied languages and business background. And I studied French at the University of Michigan, and I was going down the path of fashion, retail, kind of that angle. And I worked in Paris for a little while. And actually, I was thinking, you know, we had chatted previously about our prior experiences and how that all fed into it. And I worked in Paris for a brief time for a designer in a couture house. His name, Emmanuel Ungaro, and he sadly has passed away, but his fashion house was known for color and pattern and superimposing everything. And that was probably one of the first real kind of epiphanies that I had as an artist, but also as someone who's looking on someone else's practice, about how different patterns can work with one another. And you may be playing off of similar color variations, but you also may be bringing in totally different patterns. And that was really eye-opening for me. And then one of the things that I thought was also interesting, I reflected on how I loved the artist Kaf Fassett, who focuses on textiles. He has designed wallpapers and fabrics for interiors, and he did a whole embroidery collection. He's a British designer, and he's been around for a long time. I think I got to know him because my parents were English and we traveled a lot. And, you know, you pick up these magazines and you would see who was being highlighted in those different places. And I remember Facet being one of those individuals whose work was always just so brilliant and so colorful and playful and exuberant. And I love that. And not that my home is like that, but I love the play of color and I love the way colors interact. So going back to your question, Kelly, when we think about how all of those patterns and colors that are in my work, it's not so much that I'm planning exactly how they're going to land in the composition, because actually I'm laying one color down and then deciding where the other parts are going to be masked off, and then laying on that second color, and then a third, and then a fourth. And actually, some of those pieces, the piece that you're talking about is on mulberry paper, and it's Transient Phenomena, and it's five panels that are 60 inches by about 21. And so there is that scale, but each of those panels was printed one, each color was printed one at a time, and there are 6 to 12 layers on each one of those. Wow. Where I've manipulated the stencils. So sometimes the stencil, so maybe the first color is yellow. They're not all, they all didn't start with the same color purposefully. So that might have been my only planning. But the whole idea of them evolving, it really just happened on the press bed. Mm-hmm. And what I saw was happening, I acted in the moment and thought, okay, this is where I'm going next. This is the next color. And because those panels are so time consuming, I may only do two or three colors at a time, because the plate itself was about 65 inches long and I would ink the whole thing. So, they all evolved color by color.
Right on.
Yeah. The reason I asked is because they look very thought out. You can tell that there is a lot of attention placed on what colors work with the actual forms that you're using. And when you said that you're not a planner, you know, and I know that there's some background there for you as not a color theorist, but you definitely have a lot of experience in what works and what works together.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's important about, especially as we're talking about that specific piece, what I was also really thinking about for that piece, and really for that body of work that was shown with that piece for my MFA thesis exhibition in particular, was the whole idea of pattern and difference. And so I was investigating, and it's Gilles Deleuze, and it's the whole idea of repetition. And yet you can change one small aspect of your composition or your use of a shape, and you move it somehow, or you use a different color, and the finished composition is different. And that it's like the butterfly effect, right? It's one small action creates a different reaction or outcome. And I love that. I think a lot of my work is a play on that, because I am in the moment, and I really love that expression, that creative expression, and that freedom that comes from making the decision in the moment. So much of our lives is guided and scripted and determined, and we have things that we have to do because we aim, for the most part, to be responsible and do all the things. But here in my work, I get to play and I get to really push the envelope a little bit on what might work and what might not, and push it all the way to that edge. And not that I'm necessarily willing to take it over the edge, but I really love that ongoing conversation about all the things that are happening in a composition. And so it's that play of the architectural and the botanical in those pieces in particular, mm-hmm. and really moving those elements around. And some of the highlights, when you look at it, depending on where you're standing and where the light is coming from, because it has been shown against the wall, but my favorite way to show that piece is actually hanging in the middle of a room so that you can look on both sides of the each of those panels and you can see how translucent they are and how they play off of each other. And I think that is a very important conversation when we're thinking about how we're hanging our work also and how we want the space around it to be part of that conversation.
I have some questions. One, I guess if you could elaborate on the place that you make your work. Before we started the interview, you mentioned that it's a little bit of a journey to get there. And so you're making the most of your time while you're there. Can you talk a little bit about the place? And
while you're mm-hmm. answering that, I'm going to throw another piece to that question too. You're talking about reflecting on nature, and you are outside of Austin. You're in Texas, and yes. I know the landscape there is very diverse and beautiful. And I'd like to know also after or during this question, how your place affects the work as well.
So actually, I think I'm going to be able to answer both questions in this response. So I have a small studio at home, which is also full of books and other art pieces that are complete. So it's partially a library, partially storage. And that is always a kind of a management issue where I'm moving one stack so that I can focus on what I need to do in the moment. And so what I've found is that working at Flatbed Press, which is the Center for Contemporary Printmaking in Austin, it's a fantastic studio space where I'm a community press member. And they are about an hour, a little over an hour away, depending on traffic. But I go down to that studio probably every other week. And I may go several days consecutively just to really get a big push and kind of keep that flow that happens when you're really devoted and in the studio. But what I've also found is that I really do like working in my home space. And that has just been part of my practice forever. I'm a mother, I'm now a grandmother, and I've always had to kind of determine how I'm going to fit my art making within the domestic space. And within that domestic space, as I see it, which is not just the house, but it's the garden and it's the yard, and we're on some acreage, and I do actually manage that all now, and because all the kids are out of the house. But that is all part of that influence and inspiration. I love the landscape. I love nature, and I'm fascinated by native plants. I'm a master gardener, and I'm very active with our local association. I love learning on any subject, but especially about the environment and our plants and the native environment and just all the things that we can do to really sustain our place. And place for me is the plants that grow in this space, and they influence my work. They show up in like transient phenomena in my stencils and the shapes, botanical shapes that I use, because they're all around us. And what's really interesting about that, about native plants, is that there are a lot of correlations across the country. There are different plants in Europe and, of course, different plants in South America and the African continent. But there, the importance of native plants is really, it's just vital for all of the animals in those respective environments. And I really love to nurture that. And so what I'm finding is that my practice is about building observations about what is here and how they coexist and inhabit the space where I also live. And then take those ideas, and I may have prepared a whole bunch of stencils here in advance, and I take those to Flatbed and I work with those in my printmaking process, and I knock out a whole bunch of work there, and then I bring that work back once it's dry, and I can do more work. My recent work, actually, I have a show in November with another artist, Ginny Massarang, and that is going to be in Georgetown, Texas, which is a town outside of Austin, and it's very art-centric. It's a fantastic community, and the Georgetown Art Center really does a fantastic job. Little plug for them. But Ginny and I decided that show was going to be really thinking about our complex relationship with nature, and it's called Entangled. And so I'm really thinking about how my work is evolving and keeping that entanglement in mind. And so I'm playing with deconstructing my work and utilizing components of my prints on paper and on mulberry in different ways in other works to build up layers. And so it's a constant evolution and always playing with color, but also I love this mix of media and working in cold wax, possibly in encaustics with hot wax, and also bringing in fibers with this piece. And my last work that I just completed is actually where I've stitched one of my deconstructed panels, kind of bringing back the old Samantha's hobbies of sewing and doing a lot of designing on that front, and building a panel with silk organza. So I love the experimentation and kind of taking those different elements into a new body of work.
Awesome. And you actually touched on and answered part of the question that I was going to ask. You mentioned that you're a painter who has recently been excited about printmaking. How do they speak to each other? So what are some of the differences and some of the commonalities that they have? And I know there are some overlap there. You mentioned taking some pieces from your printmaking, and maybe do they make their ways into your painting sometimes? Or what is that relationship like?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think what's interesting, I think if you're trained as a painter, you're working. You can't just snap your fingers and the piece is finished, right? You're building it incrementally, and you're thinking about which components need to be laid down first, kind of building up your color values or your composition. And you're thinking about how the use of space, regardless of what it is you're painting, whether it's an abstract or representational, you're thinking about that understory. And then you're building those other layers above it. And what you end with is what other people see, typically, unless you're really playing at those layers and you're kind of pushing and pulling and removing some of those components, you know, sanding or whatever you choose to do. And I think what's interesting about printmaking is that you do have to do the same kind of thing. You're building, especially if you're working with more than one layer. You have to think about how those layers are going to play with each other. And so I think that is that's a commonality. But I think one of the things that's different is, let me backtrack. I think one of the interesting things about monotype is that I could actually paint the plexiglass and work that way. And there are many artists who do that. And they do it very well. But one of the things that I found is that I really like the play of pattern and how those different shapes reappear in different ways. They might be magnified in some compositions. They might be really small and really undetectable in others, but there's still this repetition that occurs. And while I don't create editions, that aspect of printmaking is really wonderful for me because I feel like it gives me a way to address the subject matter that I'm trying to address without going down too many side streets, if that makes sense. I'm able to really focus my attention on what's happening in front of me, and I have a plan, even though it may be unplanned, with what's in front of me. And then
the unplanned plan. That sounds like another body of work.
Yeah, I know. It's really it may not make sense for someone who hasn't done printmaking, but there's in that moment you make a decision and you run with that. And where in painting you can make a decision and you can wipe it off or paint over it, of course. But I don't feel that same way with printmaking. I feel like once it's on the paper, especially the way I'm doing it, because I don't use opaque colors, I use all translucent. So whatever's underneath is going to show up. So if I messed up on that first, in any way, in my own view even, in that first layer, it's still going to show up when I've laid the 12th layer.
Right.
And so it's all right there. And I think that is one of the challenges and one of the things that I really love about the printmaking process.
Great. That was a great answer. Thank you for elaborating on that. I love to understand or try to understand a little bit about the process and your thinking and how the relationships are in your practice between mediums, because I also do painting and I haven't done a whole lot of printmaking lately, but some sculpture, and they do have some, commonalities, but then sometimes they'll be totally opposite for a reason. Sometimes I just want to explore the yin and the yang of an idea, and sometimes they may not look like they go together at all. It's mm-hmm. It's nice to hear what your process is. And it sounds like you're thinking about the layering and the color in a similar way, even though maybe the subject matter may be a little bit different or stylistically may not be the same.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to add that I'm not a watercolorist. And I think that's because I don't have the patience for it. I work in acrylic because I can work and I know it's going to dry in a reasonable amount of time. And then I can build up the next layer. And that's what's also interesting to me with encaustic and cold wax. It's really a time factor. And I have these pockets of time where I have time to create. And so there's no doubt that my artistic practice is framed by that. And I don't see it as a limitation. Sometimes we need to think about how those constraints make us better artists and how, we can manage our time in those ways and really dive in. But I know that I don't have the patience for oil painting, and I'm maybe more nervous about watercolor because it is there on the page. And
watercolor is very unforgiving.
Very unforgiving.
Once you make a decision and you do it, it's like there's no wiping that off.
Samantha, you provided us with some reference images to give us a little background about your work. And in one of those images, it looked like a photograph of maybe seeds or pods or something along those lines. Was that a photograph? Was it a print? Can you elaborate on what that photo, that image was?
Yeah, I saw horseshoe crabs upside down in the sand. That's what I saw.
That's what you saw. So I sent you two images that were actually of, I guess I could say, artifacts from our property, really kind of a celebration of place that you alluded to earlier, Kelly. And one of the images was the view of this amazing stem from a yucca, and it's called a yucca filamentosa, which is native to Texas, but you actually find it in several states across the U.S. But we had this amazing bloom, and it's typically on one stem, and you have these beautiful white flowers, and they last for a really long time. But what's also remarkable is that when they dry, they hold, it's almost like they have these seed pods that open. And I admit to not seeing that interim step. I wasn't sure if they actually did have seeds in them, because I only stumbled on it after it had dried. And it's just this amazing sculptural shape on this stem. It was starting to decay, and so I took it off the plant and marched home with my lute, and decided that I needed to use that in a cyanotype, which is a process that I'm not necessarily very good at it, but I really am fascinated with the idea of this process that uses the sun, but it's the play of light and shade, essentially, on the surface where you apply this solution. And I did plan, and there's the little catch-all, I did plan this piece where I really wanted to have cyanotype along with one of my monotypes. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be two layers of cyanotype on silk organza, and or if it was just going to be the one, or how it was really going to work, or if it was going to work. So there's a lot of experimentation that happens when I'm going down a different direction, and I don't necessarily read all the books in advance. I really like to kind of see what happens, because sometimes, even if it's not the exact outcome that someone else may want, it may be what I want to use in my work. And what's fascinating about cyanotype is that all of the processes within it are so fascinating. You apply the solution to the surface. You either let that dry, or if you're working in wet cyanotype, you actually work very quickly and you lay down whichever elements you want to create a positive, negative effect on the surface. And I knew I wanted to use native plants. So I did gather a variety of native plants. I had bee balm, I had the yucca, I had some prairie grasses and thistles that I have on my property. They're Texas thistles, and it's a plant that I just love. I mean, you imagine a thistle, but it has this brilliant pink flower that evolves. And of course, when it dries, it lets go of all these seeds that float and land randomly on your property, which would be highly stressful for many people, but it's not for me. And I just love that evolution. And so I used those plants on this silk organza, and it was just so amazing to stand there and watch as the solution was altering because of the light, and it went to this beautiful ochre brown color with some of the blues that you get from cyanotype kind of playing in the light. And then you wash it after a certain time has lapsed, and it transforms yet again, and it leaves this white positive space within the sea of blue, and it's just captivating. And because it's on organza, you're able to see through it, and that also is an aspect that I really love, that translucency, which would then allow the monotype to show through on the other side. And so those elements of the local plants, the plants that I have in my environment, and you know, some parts of the property are manicured, but most of it is actually prairie and very wild. And we're really trying to get a lot of wildflowers in and really support prairie grasses, because I don't know, I mean, it's maybe across the United States that you've heard that a lot of people are moving to Texas and there's a lot of construction happening. But what's also happening in all of these green spaces are diminishing, and those green spaces are actually really important for all of the native plants and native animals and insects. And so that is something that we're trying to cultivate here and really maintain for the pollinators. And so that's also part of this thinking that's happening in my mind. And a lot of the reading that I do is centered on being a better steward for this natural environment in which we live.
You spend a lot of time outside, it's obvious, in your natural environment, which is reflected in your work. Do you ever work outside? I know you're talking about the cyanotype, but do you, like, some of the things that I do is I actually collect some of the natural foliage from and use it in my artwork. And there's actually some seagrass under the table in my studio now that the cat likes to play with. Yeah. And I actually use it at the actual piece as stencil. Do you do that at all, or?
Oh, yes. So like the yucca bloom, I still have that because, you know, it doesn't.
It's impressive. Like, it's an interesting piece of nature.
It is. It's fascinating. And it didn't deteriorate. That's one of the great things about the cyanotype. You're just laying it down on the surface. I'm not printmaking with that. And I actually don't do direct botanical prints. I use all of those botanicals to then make a stencil, which is out of Duralar, a great material, which I can use repeatedly without causing that one example or that one sample, or multiple samples actually, to kind of disappear in that one printing process. And so I do go out and collect. And like the bee balm is just such a fascinating flower. It's a wildflower that is in Texas, but I'm sure it's elsewhere too. And it has like it grows these little towers of flowers, stacking them one on top of the other. And just from a, you know, just observing nature and being aware of how fascinating the design of these wildflowers, these flowers are, is just, it's just really wonderful to observe. And so I love going for long walks and, you know, taking the dogs and going for long walks and really seeing what's out there and really closely looking at what's right down in the ground and looking at the colors of the rocks and the pebbles and then the moss. And then, you know, you have these just very small different plant formations that occur. And then you have the grasses and these wildflowers, and it's beautiful. And I do grow flowers. I love roses. My grandfather grew roses. My dad grew roses. And so I do have a thing for roses. And here in Texas, you know, you can grow roses, but really the ones that do really well are the heritage roses. So, you know, I've kind of figured out what works here.
It sounds beautiful. I think maybe we'll have to come down and stay at the Samantha Melvin Airbnb so we can check out your amazing environment down there.
Yeah. Sounds fabulous. And it's, you know, and one of the things, I mean, and I love the wildness of it. And there's that just, it kind of transfers maybe to my work in a way, in terms of, you know, it's where it lands. And while I may have like a big picture vision of how I want the things to go, whether it's an individual work or a body of work, I'm not so focused on the minute detail every single moment, because then you lose the bigger picture. So I really love that idea of the randomness and what happens, and the serendipitous nature of nature. And I really try to communicate that in my work. But one of the fascinating parts of that is that we humans are living in nature, and we are part of it, and we are nature. And it's, how do we coexist, and how does this place inform us as to be better humans, but also how does it nourish us from a kind of a sensory perspective? And I think that's really interesting.
And important. I think it's important mm-hmm. for other people when they start tuning in to nature. I think mm-hmm. you start to become a little more, bit more empathetic with the environment and understanding that we're all part of it. So, Samantha, we really appreciate your time.
Definitely.
And you kind of going in deep into your process. And I hope everyone will go and check out your work because it's worth the trip. And
thanks.
We look forward to seeing where things continue to progress for you. And we may have to hit you up when we swing down that way. I've never been to Austin. I've always wanted to go. So.
Yeah, thank you for making time for us, Samantha. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, you need to plan a field trip. That would be so great.
Sounds good.